So good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are, from my perspective, people who are making a difference, sending consciousness, waves of understanding, and even self-love through the collective of our species at this time on the planet. And I have a very exciting guest tonight, Amy Robbins Williams, who is actually something I've never heard of before, a musical parenting expert. Can you believe that? That's such an inspiring title. And Amy's also a healing music artist. And welcome to the show, Amy.
Hi, Veronica. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Oh, I'm just really glad to talk with you about all this stuff. You were an expressive arts therapy student, or that's been your history, your educational history?
Yes. My first master's degree is in expressive arts therapies, mm-hmm. and I worked with inner city kids in Boston, and then moved back to my native Maine and worked with children here, and then really wanted to reach kids before they got to that crisis point. So I became a school counselor, and now I'm a mom.
Well, that sounds like it's a good broad spectrum. As an expressive arts therapy in the inner city, did you use dance or sound or music or so on to help kids in crisis?
Absolutely. What we did was called integrative expressive arts therapies, or intermodal. So we would move. You might start with a drawing, and then you would move the drawing, and then you would add words to that movement, and then you would move into a, you might add sound to that. You might sing your movement, and then you would have other people react to what that touched in them. So you're really creating a very healing space of connection through the arts.
Were these kids that were in critical states, at risk kind of states? Or?
You know, it really varied. I was sort of across the spectrum. I would work with small children in schools, mm-hmm. and then kids who had been in gang situations.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, kids that were just having a hard time in general.
And so, did you get a lot of turnaround? How was the result?
You know, the wonderful thing about the arts, Veronica, is that there's always sort of a magical moment of when you truly enter into the artistic space, you can't help but be touched by that magic very deeply. Mm-hmm. And I found that, you know, some kids could hold on to that, and really it could work within them and transform them in, you know, pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. And for others, it was more of a long process, and maybe that moment just became a touchstone that they could go back to and remember when they were having a hard time.
Did you find that they could ease those tendencies to be violent, for example, and to fight?
Well, you know, I can't say that I worked with them very long term. The settings that I was in were not long term settings. So I don't know if I have that kind of information, but I know that there are expressive arts therapists out there doing just really wonderful, wonderful work.
Mm-hmm. It's very exciting. I know it's a really innovative subject. Of course, it would have mm-hmm. to be, wouldn't it? So what's a musical parenting expert do? What do you do? What can you teach us about parenting?
Well, I'm really passionate about getting people singing with their children because it's becoming sort of a lost art. Mm-hmm. There was a study done by a man named Dr. John Feuerbrand. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce his name, but he interviewed people in their 80s about, you know, games that their parents had played when they were babies on their knee, you know, where they little songs and little finger games and little games that you did with their toes. And people in their 80s, or the 60 to 80 range, had a whole wealth of this knowledge and all kinds of little games that they could come up with. And then he interviewed people in their 50s and 60s, and they had a few, but not so many. And then he interviewed parents in their 40s, and this group really didn't know any of those games or songs anymore. Oh. And it's really become a repertoire that we're losing culturally that is so important to hang on to.
So why is it important? I would die without it, but why is it important, do you think, for our species?
Well, and you say you would die without it. I mean, when you're a mom and you're interacting that way with your child, it gives you something to do that's fun, mm-hmm. for one thing. So there's the sort of keeping you in your happy mommy space, It gives you a way to interact with your child. But music actually speaks to a different part of the brain than regular language.
Aha.
There's actually a singing center in the brain. And you know what is so exciting is that you can actually, if you are singing to your child and they have those lyrics and those melodies in their head and they start singing with you, mm-hmm. they can actually recover from a stroke. If they lose their language and they can't, their language center doesn't work, they can actually build their language from their singing center.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
I had no idea, but I did tell you the story of when we were singing Christmas carols one time and a fellow who had been unable to talk for years with Alzheimer's began to sing harmony in German.
Mm.
And that's the same thing, isn't it? Is that what you're saying, is that there's a center in which that moves past his cognitive abilities?
Absolutely. Their music was able to access something that language wasn't. And imagine the wonder that came back with that memory. Obviously, something in that song was so very deeply embedded in him, mm-hmm. and the emotions were probably there with it. So if he was, you know, very happy at the time when he was singing that song, singing that song and bringing it into his environment really freed him.
Isn't that something? And it was Silent Night, which is about as old and plain as they come for Christmas carols, isn't it?
Right.
Isn't that a wonderful thing? So we have a singing center, a music center. It's music. It's not just singing, right?
It is. It's a music center. And it's really important to sort of develop that in your child. And the best time to do that is in the first 3 years.
Okay.
And music is a wonderful parenting tool because if you need to get your child's attention, every parent knows you can nag and nag and nag, and it can make you crazy. Mm-hmm. But if you sing your child's name, I guarantee you they will turn their head and wonder what's going on. Because they can block out you saying, like if I say to my son, for example, Clayton, 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 but if he will just ignore me. But if I sing, Clayton Wilson knows I love him, he will just perk right up.
Oh, wow.
And what's going on, Mom? What do you need? What can I do?
Wow. You know, there's an old Sufi thing where you sing each other's names. Do you know that?
I have never heard that. Tell me more.
Well, it's a wonderful thing where I would take your name and just sing, Amy, Amy, any tune that wanted to come out of me. And I would just sing to you and you'd stand there and be in it. And when I've done that with groups of people, some people just burst into tears as you sing their name.
Wow.
And it's also a healing tool. Not trying to digress from what you're saying, but I think this adds to it. It's a healing tool where people release all kinds of stressors that have gone on when somebody said, Amy, Amy, you know, that sort of thing. It kind of gives them access to flow out or something. People feel a real change. So thank you for that. That's corroborating something very wise, isn't it?
I love that. And I hadn't heard of that tradition, and it's something in it really strikes a deep chord in me because it's a sort of a way of seeing someone, isn't it? I mean, you're entering into the sacred space of them and their name and sort of channeling the beauty of that name to them.
And it is sort of, well, actually what's really interesting, if you have a group of people and they're all singing their own names, okay, and they're singing any tune that they feel like. It's amazing. After a little while, there becomes this amazing chord, and even though no one's prepared, you know. And it sort of gives you the idea that can harmonize who we are.
Wow.
So, yeah, thank you for that. I'm fascinated by the effect of music. So tell me more about musical parenting, because this is very exciting.
Yeah. Well, my son and I had a hard start. He was born 6 weeks early, and he and I we both almost died when he was born.
Oh, my.
And so after he cut through the NICU, it was actually music that calmed him down that first night because we were not able to be together. So my husband took my first album, Circling, and took that to the hospital that he was in because we were separated in different hospitals. And as soon as he put on a recording of me singing, my son just calmed right down, and his breathing regulated, and it was like he knew we were all together.
Wow.
So I knew that music was going to be a really powerful tool for his healing and for our bonding, you know, because in those first couple weeks when he was in the NICU, they were really tense times.
What's the NICU? You know? What is the NICU?
Oh, I'm sorry, the neonatal intensive care unit.
Ah.
It's where sick babies are held while they get well. And we could only hold him every 3 hours on this sort of schedule. So, you know, as a mom, your arms just ache to hold your baby.
That's for sure.
So when I got him home, you know, people would laugh and say, are you ever going to put him down? And I said, no.
Now, are you still carrying him around at 6 years old?
I'm not now. He's now six. He runs and walks away from me now. But, you know, music was a way for me to heal myself, mm-hmm. for us to communicate. So I started...
Did you sing while you were in the hospital? Sorry to interrupt you. Did you sing while you were in the hospital?
No.
Okay.
I think I was I was just trying to get through when we were there.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It was like when I gave birth to him, it was an amazing experience of complete surrender, because I knew that there was nothing that I could do but breathe deeply and pray.
Hmm.
And that has really informed my parenting also, because I know that, you know, he is on his own journey,
mm-hmm.
and there will be times in his life when all I can do is breathe deeply and pray.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually got sick again when he was 14 months and had another life-threatening condition that he got himself through, you know, with me holding him and singing him and, you know, giving him all the Reiki that I could. So anyway, the music was a way for me to regulate my emotions and keep my fear down, as well as a way for me to communicate with him. So, you know, he got to a point where he hated to have his diaper changed. So I made up a little mommy jingle called, it was just our diaper ditty. So every time we went to change his diaper, we would sing, "We're going to change the baby's diaper. We're going to change the baby's diaper. We're going to change the baby's diaper so you'll be clean and dry." And it got me, so as soon as you start singing, it just lifts your spirit, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So it helped me to be in this happy place. And he got this consistent cue that said, okay, it's time to change my diaper. Mommy knows it's time. I know it's time. It doesn't have to be a big deal. We don't have to get upset about it. And we just had a really great time.
Wow.
So every time I wrote a new jingle and it worked, I thought, well, oh, geez, what else can we sing about, you know? So we have the getting dressed conga and the getting in the car songs and teaching songs. And, you know, other moms around me would say, well, geez, what are you doing with your son? You know, where did you learn that? Where did you get that jingle? And so I decided to put it all together in an online course, and that's how Mommy Jingles came to be.
And that's the name. That's the name of a course.
Yes, Mommy Jingles,
mm-hmm.
and you just go to mommyjingles.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's an 8-week musical parenting course for new parents, and it teaches, you know, how you can use music with your child throughout the day. And what's wonderful about it is that parents are so busy that, you know, they look at me and they're like, "Oh, I don't have time to learn a lullaby. I don't have time to learn, you know, these other little things." But I say, okay, a jingle will take between 30 seconds and 2 minutes. Can you give your child 2 minutes, 2 or 3 times a day? And they say, yeah, I can do that. I said, okay, I'm going to teach you how to do that. And it's going to be fun, you know, because those first few months with your child can be very scary. And
yeah, I think they are very scary, aren't they? I was 41 when I had my child. And that was scary, too, you know.
A big change, wasn't it?
Huge change, yes. But I love the idea of the jingles. So do you literally just create a song around everything that you do? Is that what you do?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, there are almost 50 jingles in the course. But I tell parents, just learn one a week. If you learn one little jingle every week for 8 weeks, just that's a huge amount of learning and a lot more music in your home than what you had before. It's a huge accomplishment. And, you know, some things are going to be appropriate for when your baby is a baby. And then we've got, like, you know, the potty conga for when you're potty training your child.
conga.
Which saved us. I thought I was going to lose my mind when we were doing the potty training. But if we could make it have a little potty party and make these little potty shakers and do a little dance, it added a lot more fun to it so that we were having a good time together.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, because it's true. When you sing, when you're creating music of any type, really, we're really responding to be vibrational, to being vibrational beings, aren't we?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
And what I tell parents, they say, you know, I don't have a good voice. Do I really have to sing? Can I just put on a CD? And, of course, you can use CDs. CDs are great for, like, expanding your repertoire. But it's so crucial that you open your mouth and let whatever comes out, come out. Because it teaches your child that music comes from people.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches them that they can be creators of music, not just consumers of music. And that is what is going to, you know, I think, save our world. Is that we have to learn to be creators again, not just consumers.
Remember, you know, in the olden days, I know I'm way older than you are, but during, for example, the wartime or the Depression and so on, people all made music together because they didn't have any money for all the other, the other productions of music. And
people missed the money. There also wasn't the technology.
Yeah.
I mean, my grandfather would tell me wonderful stories about going over the river and through the woods, you know, to people's houses, and you were expected to either recite a poem or sing a song or play the piano or play some instrument that you were going to bring because you were the entertainment.
And also the entertainment was the group thing too, wasn't it? The harmony and the putting your heads together.
Right.
Tell me, did you also study music therapy?
Well, music therapy is a big part of expressive arts therapies. What expressive arts therapies does at Lesley University where I studied is it combines art therapy, music therapy, and drama, psychodrama. Those three are sort of the core elements, and you study bits of each, and then you learn how to combine them all. And then I also studied music in Ireland, so that was I got a second master's degree when I was called back to doing some performance, and studied ritual song and chant there.
Hmm. Well, so your performance is song, tends to be a song, is that right?
Yeah. Yep,
that's
I'm an
really
acapella healing music performer.
Wow, and you've got some beautiful pieces online. I saw that in YouTubes and so on.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's very exciting. So back to musical parenting. Have you been able to sort of sing your way through some big traumas with your son now that he's older?
Oh, I think music has saved us from lots of traumas. You know, just because if you have to ask your child to do things over and over and over again, it's very hard to maintain that patient place. So it's a wonderful way to cut through that with music. So one of my favorite jingles is just the Come to the Table jingle. So every night when it's time to eat, I sing, "Come to the table as soon as you are able." And he just comes like he's in a trance.
Oh.
And I don't have to nag.
Have you ever had a combative moment with him where you were able to sing your way out of it?
You know, I find that humming is really wonderful for those moments.
Mm-hmm.
If you can hold your child close, and this is really wonderful too when they're sort of at the ages where tantrums might become an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You can ward off tantrums in a wonderful way if you hold your child close, sort of shut out the exterior noise, because a lot of tantrums come from them just being completely overstimulated.
Right.
And you create this place sort of in the hollow of your chest, you know, and you bring them into that place and just an ah sound or a hum, and that really can sort of sync their heart with your heart and bring them into a calm place.
Hmm. So does your son sing?
Oh, all the time.
Good.
He sings to his Legos. He sings to his creatures. He says, "Mommy, what are we having for dinner? You know? I call them our kitchen operas. So, you know, I'll say, well, tonight we're having peas. Tonight we're having peas. Come to the table, please.
Does your husband sing as well?
Oh, yeah. And he would say that he's not a singer. But he does the craziest stuff. He's such a good rhymer. Mm-hmm. So he does this rhyming chant stuff with Clayton that is just hilarious. And as a family, we're very punny. So we love plays on words and those kinds of things. So they always come out in our operas and in our musical interactions. It just adds an element of fun.
Yeah,
you know?
I should
to
think.
Keep your house, keep the spirits up.
Good ambiance. So talking about spirits, let's get down to talking about Santa Claus.
Ooh. And the big red suit.
Well, I love what you said. And I put it out in a little flyer. I said, is Santa Claus punitive? This is something that I think we want to talk about a great deal.
Well, you know, I've been thinking a lot lately. In our house, we don't have commercial television, and so I sometimes find that when I go out into the world, like this last weekend I went to Philadelphia for a conference, I was sort of taken aback by some of the things that I saw. And I got thinking, now, is it really okay for us to be telling our children that they're only deserving of great love if they're nice? In fact, I saw a YouTube last night, which, you know, several people had liked as being really funny. And this parent was talking to a three-year-old boy, and the three-year-old boy had just done something to his brother, like maybe bitten him or something. And so the three-year-old was just frantically trying to convince his parents not to report on him to Santa. And so, you know, he was just in tears. And I thought, is this okay? You know, is it okay that we're sort of getting off as parents on these power trips and saying, you know, we have all this power, and if you're not doing exactly what we want, you're not going to get the most wonderful day of the year as it's billed, you know. You're not going to receive that love. And I thought, you know, if this was someone teasing a puppy, mm-hmm. people would be frantic about it. They would be so upset. But because, for some reason, we're talking about children and Santa, it's okay to threaten our kids.
Do you think that that's just a sign of, you know, I was talking to you on the phone before about how so many people are believing that we're going through a huge shift in the collective, which is a move toward being, if I have, you don't, but more into a unity, a community consciousness, more love, more acceptance. Are you thinking that maybe, or is this response to Santa Claus or suddenly waking up to what we're doing to kids, is that a part of this shift, do you think?
I think it very well may be, and I hope that, you know, we can have conversations about what the meaning of Christmas is to us and how we're going to interact with our children. And there's been a huge movement, anti-bullying movement,
right?
And I think we need to extend that anti-bullying movement sort of into the holidays and into our consciousness about how we react and how we act with our children. Why are we giving gifts? Are we giving gifts because people deserve it? Are we giving gifts because we want to share great love that comes through us? Are we giving gifts because we love them unconditionally and because we want to give?
Are we giving them just because we have to right now because they're on our list, yes?
Right. Mm-hmm. And what is the meaning of a true gift? And I don't necessarily have the answers to any of these, Veronica, you know?
Amy, we're counting on you.
I'm just really interested in the questions mm-hmm. and in having people ask themselves these questions. For us in my family, when my son was born, see, I grew up going to church at Christmas, but I also grew up with Santa and reindeer, the whole bit, you know?
Right.
And so the first Christmas, my son was... 18 months old. Well, I guess it was the second Christmas. And I bought him this little suit that had ho, ho, ho on the bottom and took him to get his picture taken with Santa. And then I brought the picture home and showed it to my husband, and he said, well, you know, I really don't want Santa to be part of our Christmas tradition.
Whoa.
And you could have knocked me over with a feather. I said, are you kidding me? We're not going to do Santa? What do you mean? And he said, well, you know, for me, that's not what Christmas is about. You know, Christmas for me is about great love coming into the world for all of us. And it's not because we're nice. It's because we've sometimes been naughty. But all of us need that love. Mm-hmm. And if we can focus on love and we can give from a place of love, then the world will be a magical place. And he said, that's what I want to teach my son.
Wonderful. And that's the embodiment of that great love is really the challenge, isn't it? When we're deceived by other things. So did you have to go through a huge change?
Oh, yeah. We had debates. Let me tell you, we had debates. And my parents thought we were just awful, awful for not wanting to do a lot with Santa. You know, mm-hmm. they said, well, aren't you going to have reindeer? Aren't you going to make Christmas lists? You know, isn't that the magic of Christmas? And I had to think, and I said, well, you know, I guess I don't think that that is the magic of Christmas. The magic of Christmas is the coming of love into the world. And so how can I create traditions in my family that reflect that love? And we didn't, in the end, give up on the complete Santa picture. What we did was I had a wonderful friend that said, well, have you heard about St. Nicholas? And I had never heard about St. Nicholas. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, you know, St. Nicholas was a saint, and he gave presents anonymously because he loved God and because that love flowed through him, and he wanted to give. So everybody gets gifts. There's no naughty or nice stuff. And I said, oh, that's fabulous. And I said, Tim, what do you think about St. Nicholas? Can we do St. Nicholas? And that's what we've done every year, is we have St. Nicholas who comes to our house. And it was such a part of our tradition that I never really thought, Clayton hadn't really had the outside influences to wonder that mm-hmm. much about Santa mm-hmm. until this year when he was in public school. And he started hearing a lot about Santa, and I think he started wondering, well, is Santa going to give better gifts than St. Nicholas?
You know? Oh, that's interesting.
And should I be trying to get on the good side of this guy, Santa? And so we had a long discussion about the difference between Santa and St. Nicholas and why we give gifts and do we all have to be nice all the time? And is it even possible for us to always be nice? And is it someone else's right to be able to judge us? Or do we judge others? You know, these are all the questions that sort of come up with that kind of unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to the conditional love of Santa.
And how many people are much nicer when they're loved as opposed to when they're judged? You know, our defenses get us into the most problem, don't they?
Oh, they do. Mm-hmm. You know, you can tell if someone is seeing the loving part of you and just accepting you, don't you just melt into that?
Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, on the other side, if someone is judging you and just thinking that you're an awful person, I mean, you can feel that, and it makes you want to be mean and angry. You know?
Yeah. So, well, because you're usually mean and angry with yourself.
Right.
And that certainly emanates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. When I looked up online, I looked up St. Nicholas because you inspired me, darling.
And, oh, great.
and what I read about was that about 300 AD is when he was really reigning in a little town called Myra.
Myra, mm-hmm. Yep, which is now about where Turkey is.
But it's interesting that through the years, St. Nicholas also was a purveyor of gifts according to naughty or nice. Did you know that?
Yes, I think it was the Germans and the Northern Europeans sort of adopted St. Nicholas and twisted him a little bit.
Yeah.
And they
were going to send him to Spain, these kids to Spain if they were naughty.
Oh, really? I love Spain. I would love to be sent to Spain.
Send me to Spain. I'm up for that. But it's just interesting. I was thinking as I read through these various things that human nature seems to have distorted all that to keep control, to bully.
It seems like it. And I would love to know the time frames and, like, what was going on culturally. What were we afraid of as people that we would want our to like keep a real tight lid on our kids' behavior.
Well, remember that it wasn't even illegal to kill a naughty child until the end of the 1800s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was legal to kill them.
Wow.
Or there was no legal battle about it anyway. So we haven't gone that far from our, you called it bullying. I'm going, yeah, we haven't gone that far from our intolerance of children not, you know, not being perfect. Have we? I mean, you're talking about cutting edge attitude here. It's really good.
I think that what's happening in this sort of new age as we approach it is that we're seeing more and more that our children are inherently wise.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can see them as equals and as our teachers even, rather than as people that we have to control and train. There was someone who told me when I was a very new mother that what you believed sort of theologically was really going to affect your parenting. And they said, you know, if you believe that people are inherently good and that your child is inherently good, then you will listen to your child and you'll see the beauty in them and you will, you know, sort of parent them from a loving place. If you think that people are inherently bad and have to be trained, then that's what you'll tend to do with your child. And I hope that we're moving towards a societal preference for seeing our children as our teachers.
Well, and I think that back to adults being defensive, I know a number of people, I've been counseling for a long time and used to teach as well, but myself and many other people are afraid of their children's behavior sometimes because it reflects badly on them, and then we're already defensive or scared or whatever. So that just kind of promotes that same consciousness, doesn't it?
It does. And one of the things in my book, Transformational Mothering, A Prayerful Companion for New Moms, I talk about the fact that, you know, our children are not reflections of us. Because if we see our children as reflections of us, then we're going to have to make them believe what we believe and do as we say.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to allow them that space to grow and become the people that they were sent here to be. Our job is to really be a vessel and to show them this loving place where they can grow and they can look at these ideas and ask themselves questions and figure out really what is right for me and what may not work.
So Transformational Mothering, that's an e-book, right?
Actually, it's on Kindle. You can get it as a on your e-reader, or you can get it in paperback. They're both at Amazon.
Okay. And it's called Transformational Mothering. What's this other part of it?
A Prayerful Companion for New Moms.
Great. Okay.
And that book came out of my first year as a new mom when I thought, oh my word, what has happened to me? And you know, I said, well, am I going through postpartum depression? What am I going through? What is this journey that I'm on? And my friend said to me, she said, Amy, you have gone from being a completely independent person in the world, out slaying dragons, you know, to being at home with your child. You're on a completely different journey right now. And then I realized, wow, birth was really my rite of passage. And this whole first year is me transforming and learning. And my son is going to show me all those places where I need more patience. He's showing me all those places where I need to fill my life with love so that I can surround him with that love. And so I started writing music and prayers that are just mother's prayers. You know, I think one of the most profound prayers we can pray as a new mom is, help, just help me. That was the result of that.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. I found, or just watching as you talk, I'm going, isn't it amazing how these babies are born with so much of their own journey? And you see it in them when you first have a baby. It's like, holy mackerel. I mean, sometimes they get things from us that we just assume they didn't. But essentially, they're themselves. They're really amazingly unique, aren't they?
And I think that they really remember more than we realize. When my son was 3, I told you that we'd had an emergency birth.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was 3, he had just started talking. He started speaking late. And we were passing the hospital where he was born. So he pipes up from the back seat and he says, Mama, is that the hospital where I was born? And I said, yes, Clayton, that is the place where they took you out of a special place in my belly called the uterus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have no idea why I phrased it that way, but I did. And he said, oh, Mama, uterus scary.
Oh, wow.
I said, Clayton, the uterus isn't scary. He said, oh, yes, Mama. I cried and I cried.
Oh, my.
And I looked across at my husband, and, you know, we were both remembering that if we had been 10 minutes later getting to the hospital, he would not be with us.
Wow.
And I turned to the back seat, and I looked him in the eye, and I said, well, and then what happened, Clayton? What happened after you cried? He said, well, then I come out, Mama. Then I born.
Oh. Wow. So he remembered,
and
eh?
He remembered that.
And was it your body that was having a terrible time? I mean, was your uterus really difficult for him?
We had a placental abruption.
Aha.
And what happens, and it was due to undiagnosed sudden onset preeclampsia. Hmm. And what happened was the placenta had started separating from the uterus, and it happened so quickly that I didn't realize it was happening until I woke up in a fever feeling horrible and started bleeding, and we rushed to the hospital and got there just in time to have a cesarean birth. And
so your little three-year-old was right that the uterus was a scary place at that
point. It was a very scary place.
Wow.
And he was one of those children that you couldn't swaddle him. He would never, he would panic if his hands and feet were, if he couldn't move his hands and feet.
Oh, wow.
And I said, well, doesn't that make sense? Because he was trying to get out of the uterus.
Right.
And he wasn't able to until this doctor came out and brought him to new life, you know? So I think on some, there is that memory. Now, he doesn't remember that today as a six-year-old.
Mm.
I think there is sort of a period of forgetting where we sort of forget what happened to us before we're three or four. I don't know, lots of people say that when the, what's the soft spot in your head?
I can never remember that.
Fontanelle.
Yeah, that's
fontanelle.
It.
They say that when the fontanelle sort of hardens and there isn't that soft spot anymore, you sort of go through a forgetting.
Hmm.
And that may be true, you know, because I don't think he remembers saying that or even having that memory consciously anymore.
Yeah, I think that it's like between three and six, there's a lot of things that change in priority learning, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, there always are, but it seems like my grandson, who's seven, it forgets a lot of things from four before now, now that he didn't forget for a long time, you know. But anyway, that's really interesting. So have you, this is kind of a silly question in a way, but have you been able to sing and vibrate with him in such a way that he will accept snuggling, for example?
Oh, yes, that's exactly how we did it.
Uh-huh.
Because it was funny. Actually, the first time that I sang to him,
mm-hmm.
he cried.
Oh.
And I said, are you kidding me? We didn't have the birth I planned. Breastfeeding has not been a picnic. And I said, I am going to sing to you. This is just going to happen.
Oh, that's great.
And that's actually, I think, why I started doing just the jingles. Because the first time I sang him a lullaby, he couldn't take it.
I'll bet you he felt too vulnerable, right?
He did.
Mm-hmm.
And all of his senses were heightened because
wow.
he wasn't fully developed. You know,
wow.
those last 6 weeks in the womb are really important as far as getting your nervous system set up.
Mm-hmm.
So he was much more raw than a full-term baby.
Hmm.
So that's when I started doing just the little jingles and just doing the little hums and the little ways for us to communicate. And as he got older, I was able to really sing to him more. And then it turned into a real way of us communicating.
Hmm.
And it's just been, it's a magical journey. I mean, there's really nothing better.
So you're kind of coaxing his body into its strength sort of thing with your music.
Right.
And so tell me about, you've got, let me see, you have an app here for lullabies?
Yes, it's called Angel Song Baby Sleep Deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is a way to provide a consistent sleep cue so that your child knows as soon as I hear this music, it's time for me to sleep. And in this very busy world
that
we have.
I like that, a sleep cue, hey?
Yeah. In the busy world that we're in, a lot of parents just aren't able to be there at bedtime. So I encourage them to find some time during the day, even if it's, there's a coming home song that you can sing, or I'm going to work song that you can sing. And if you're not able to be there at bedtime, this app is fabulous because you can just set it for as many minutes as you want. There are, I think, 11 lullabies.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting almost a full album's worth of music for $4.99.
Oh, wow.
And it's got a little night light and a timer on it, so you can get your baby to go to sleep to this music. You can wake them up to this music.
What is it? What is it that it's got a night light on it and all of that?
There is a it's a picture of the moon, so
okay.
It's a natural image. So you just pick what phase of the moon you want. If you don't want much light, you have just a sliver of a moon. And if you want more light, then you pick the full moon image.
And it's on your phone, on a person's phone?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So they can install the app on their babysitter's phone or on their grandparents' phone. If you're traveling and you've got your phone, you've got your music with you.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
Your child can hear that and just say, oh, yeah, it's time for me to sleep.
Wow. So technologically, you're saying that some of the advances are really helping soothe the children?
You know, I think we have to be very careful about the technology that we choose to integrate into our homes,
mm-hmm.
and we could talk for hours about that. And we have to make sure that we're balancing it out with our human interactions, because
okay.
our children need us more than they will ever need screens. But there's also the realities of modern life, and that's why I developed this app, is because I know, you know, if everyone gets more sleep, everyone is so much happier.
And how would you explain we need to balance it with human interaction?
You know, this is the whole reason that I created the Mommy Jingles, Veronica. You know, if you can just take a few minutes a day to look in your child's eyes and sing them a little song, or just say, you know, even if you're just singing, Clayton, I love you. Or, you know, I'll see you later. You can make up your own songs. But it's so important that we that our children find us as human beings to be their main source of comfort,
mm-hmm.
more than being comforted by a game on an app.
Do you think that that increases their ability to interact in a non-defensive way? Or what would you say? Or do you have any ideas yet?
You know, I think we're all learning as we go, which is maybe the scariest part is we don't know necessarily what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly why we have to really question everything that is marketed to us, because so much of the things that come at us, especially as new moms, is designed to make us feel inadequate. You're not on American Idol, so you can't sing to your child, so you have to have this toy that will do it.
Mm.
You can't breastfeed your child, and you know, some people can't. But I mean, you have to question, what is this marketing trying to make me feel? And is it real for me, or is it not real for me? And to really know in your heart that you are the best gift your child ever had. And you need to be able to just embrace that and give yourself as much as you can.
So the children can learn to be separated from human interaction if they do too much technology, right?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting. And so you have an app, and how do we get that?
You just go to iTunes and type in Angel Song Baby Sleep Deluxe, and it should come right up.
Angel Song Baby Sleep Deluxe?
Yes.
All right.
And it's the first of many healing music apps I'm going to be bringing out in the next year.
Hmm.
So the next one is going to be for moms, and we've got a whole year's worth of exciting, exciting stuff coming.
Ah, well, you know, this is a small change of subject, but I just wanted to throw in that the music that we run on our radio show, Paradigm Shifters, is written by Amrita Cottrell, who had a second breast with breast cancer, and her intuitive self and her guidance said, you need to study music instead of getting another partial mastectomy. So she went to university, studied music, and she healed herself of cancer. And that's the music we run on the show.
Wow, I just got chills. That's wonderful.
Yeah, her music is just I want to sort of add, it's so penetrating. You just really feel it move, you know, where you're stuck and so on. So I really encourage people to get your apps and to really pay attention to what it is you're saying, because our children can really use it.
And our children know what's genuine and what's real, whether we're talking about, you know, human interactions or interactions with the iPhone or with the computer or whatever, and or even if we're just talking about Santa or, you know, a cheap gift as opposed to a true gift, something that's given with great love, something that's given with great thought.
Okay, so I want to go back to this subject, which is great love. My feeling is that that's part of what the shift is all about right now, that we're really encouraging that to come through, right?
I'm with you.
Yeah, so a lot of this is... well, say something about great love. It's like bringing it through. It's really making us more available for it. It's installing it in families. Would you say that?
I think we're going through a shift where families are questioning what happened. I think a lot of us are going through and saying, wow, that things just don't feel quite as rich or quite as deep or quite as profound as they might have when we were children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of bringing that love back into the world is finding places for ritual in our lives and little places in our day where we can take time into our own hands and do something loving with it. And that might mean that, you know, the holidays are on us and it's really, everyone is crunched for money this year, but how can you just wrap that gift maybe with a special piece of yarn that means something, or how can you write a message that goes with that gift that makes it, that just transforms it from something that was an okay gift into that magical thing that your child will always remember.
So what are some traditions you use around your house, around your home, I should say?
Well, one that we're just starting this year that my son actually came up with is we're having a treasure hunt for our gifts this year.
Oh, neat. Oh, what a great idea.
I am so excited about it. He said he had read this book in school about treasure hunts, and he said, Mama, would you make me a treasure hunt? And I said, well, geez, I think that's a great idea. Why don't we make a treasure hunt for everyone's gifts this year? He said, yay! So, you know, we're going to, when he comes out in the morning on Christmas Day, he's going to have four or five little recipe cards on the tree with his first clue to his present. And then so the tree will say, you know, go to the table. And then he'll go to the table and get another card. And go to the dryer. And he'll go into the dryer and pick out another card. And maybe on the fourth card, there'll actually be a present. So I'm really looking forward to that, and he's really excited about making a treasure hunt for his dad's gifts.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
He gets to write them out and do that. So,
well, tell me, does he expect a gift from St. Nicholas?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And that will be a surprise?
Yes. He's getting a sled and some Legos.
Oh, wow.
Now, maybe St. Nicholas will bring us some snow.
Well,
usually we've got snow in Maine this time of year, but we don't this year.
I know. The weather patterns are really crazy, aren't they?
Yeah.
So where do you have a Christmas tree? Does St. Nicholas bring his presents to the tree?
Well, you know, when I grew up, we always got our presents by the tree. But when we were going through our traditions and trying to figure out what we were going to keep and what we were going to let go, my mother gave me this beautiful light that has a Santa figure. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is just something that I grew up with, and this is going to be our St. Nicholas light. So every year, just after Thanksgiving, when we get out the Christmas stuff, the St. Nicholas light goes in Clayton's window. And when he wakes up on Christmas morning, St. Nicholas has left him a note and the presents that he's brought by the St. Nicholas light.
Aha.
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. Now, didn't you also tell me that, is it St. Nicholas? Who was it that you told me about that wrote lists of what they wanted to give people instead of what they wanted?
Oh, yes. That is we make a different kind of Christmas list.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we bring out the Christmas stuff, we make a list of all the gifts that we've been given to bring to the world. So, you know, making people happy, or I'm good at telling jokes, or I'm good at painting, or I just learned this. And these are all the things that we can make into homemade Christmas gifts for grandparents and for friends and for family.
I love that one. That's great.
So that's really fun. And it just sort of refocuses the conversation away from what am I going to get to what am I going to give.
I really love that. So you do that? Does your son do that?
Yes, he absolutely does that. And, you know, and then we have a conversation. The other tradition we have is that he always knows it's time to clean out his toys because you have to get rid of the old to make way for the new, right?
Great.
And we go through all the toys that he's sort of outgrown, and we have a conversation about, well, what are the things that are really kind of growing in your life right now that toys, some new toys might help with? So Clayton right now is very into creating engineering things and taking machines apart and putting machines back together. So he said, you know, Mom, I think it would really be great if I could get this other Lego set because it goes with this. But what I love about that is that your wishes come from a place of wondering, not from I saw it in a catalog and I wanted it.
So that's just straight want.
Well, you know, I just find just in my own life, you know, I don't need a new pair of pants until I see it in a catalog and I'm like, oh, wow, that's really great. I'm sure my life would be much better if I had that pair of pants, you know. But if I never seen, if I had never seen the catalog, it wouldn't occur to me that I need new pants.
I know. So, I find that wandering through the stores, I'm going, boy, I thought I was quite content.
Right.
Now I'm really in the state of want. So what are some other traditions? What kind of, do you have a feast? Do you have a special meal? Do you break? I like to talk about breaking bread. I think that's a communion routine that is really very special. Do you have any dinner routines you'd like to share with us?
Well, what we do is we have a special grace that we say. And on Christmas Day, well, let me think. The traditions that we do every year, we put the tree up on my mom's birthday, which is December 17th, because she has always loved Christmas, and she just has such joy putting that together. So we always put up the tree on her birthday.
Great.
On Christmas Eve, she comes to our house, and we have our own little Christmas celebrations that we do every year, and we sing the hymns that I grew up with. And then on Christmas Day, my dad and his wife come to the house for brunch after we've had a little bit of time to do our own little Christmas thing. And then my sisters and extended family, we all get together in the afternoon and have a big Christmas dinner. So that's really
So
wonderful.
How do they feel about your approach? Are they also with it, or they argue with it? Your sisters, I mean the extended family?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they do the same thing. They, but they completely respect what we do.
Great.
And I think it's important to just tell people, you know, this is our tradition. Mm-hmm. Your tradition isn't wrong. I mean, it's not about making anyone's tradition wrong. It's just this is just what we've chosen. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that we really had to ask was like, could you not ask him if he's got a Christmas list? Mm-hmm. And could you not ask him if he's been nice? And they've just been fabulous. I mean, those questions just never come up. And, you know, Clayton knows that other people believe differently than we do, and then that's okay.
Wow. Well, this is really inspiring, and I really believe it's a tool for encouraging a very loving ambiance in your home and expanding that out. I really honor that for you. And we're going to have to draw to a close. So would you like to give everybody your contact information one more time? Don't be afraid to repeat those other connections.
Okay. You're wonderful, Veronica. Thank you. Well, you can find out more about me at amyrobinswilson.com. If you're interested in our seasonal ebook, Celebrate Great Love, that's celebrategreatlove.com. You can get information about our app on angelsongbabysleep.com. And we have loads of free resources on lullabylink.com. So if you are looking for the lyrics for a lullaby or a melody or just want to be part of the lullaby community and want some ideas on how to bring lullabies into your home, check us out there. And then, of course, finally, there's our musical parenting course, mommyjingles.com.
I think it's like you're tuning up your family.
Yeah, I love that.
Me too.
That.
I'm going
to do that.
I sing all the time, so I appreciate you so much, Amy.
Oh, thank you.
And,
thank you.
Well, let's keep in touch, and I'll send you a copy of this. I just wish you the very, very best of the season, and may we all just grow into great love.
Oh, blessed be. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much. So that was Amy Robbins Wilson, a musical parenting expert. What a delightful term that is, and what a delightful experience talking with Amy about installing more loving environments in our homes and families. And what about Christmas? So this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters. Take a deep breath and send out blessings in your out breath to all the people in our paradigm shifting community. And good night, everyone. Thank you for listening.